Other horns, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can make us play against. And make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. You got Dave riding solo today. Tom is out doing the holiday extravaganza. And I'm going to tell you what, when the Havards pack it up and they go on their Thanksgiving, sort of an annual Thanksgiving trip, it is like the Griswolds come to life. The sort of the planes, trains, automobiles, nature of where they go, how they get there. It is quite something to behold. And so as a result of that, he is knee deep in traveling somewhere along the Eastern Seaboard and not available to do a recording. So you're stuck with just me today, but I'm going to give my boy props. In fact, we're going to call him Nostra Thomas today. Tom predicted that we would break 60 against Western Carolina. And so scoring 66-3. Certainly fits that bill. And then Tom predicted that Mac Jones would throw for 300 yards. And, you know, 300 is certainly a milestone number, but Mac going 10 of 12 for 275, three touchdowns, that's pretty darn close and certainly pretty darn impressive given all the ink spilled over how Mac would play in that game as is the full-time starter. Also, I'll give sort of props to Eric, a guy that we sit with. At the game, we were talking a little bit, spitballing, and, you know, he asked the question, hey, what's our best two games this season? What's Alabama's best two games, sort of front-to-back, full game? And I landed on Arkansas and the Western Carolina game, and ironically, those are two games started by Mac Jones. And so in no way is that interpreted as Mac Jones being better than Tua, but, you know, it makes me wonder, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, is that a representation of the team rallying together? You see this in basketball where there's a star player and a lot of the rest of the team will stand around and watch the star. You take the star out and everyone contributes, and it's almost a little addition by subtraction. I am not landing on that conclusion. I just think it's an interesting observation. And then I certainly wouldn't discount the fact. I wouldn't discount the fact that, Arkansas and Western Carolina are probably the two weakest teams on the opponent that we've played. And so that's something to think about as well. If you were to merge two games and you were to take the second half of LSU in the first half, or at least the first, you know, 25 minutes of the Mississippi State game, that's almost a full game there. That's pretty robust as well. And certainly Alabama played in that sort of composite game, played very, very well up until the point of Tua's injury. It was great to see Tua back in the stadium, albeit sort of riding a golf cart, but it was exciting to see the fans sort of celebrate him. And then when Talia came in and Talia had a pretty good showing himself, it was good to see that as an outlet for appreciation for the Tagovailoa family. And so that's that was certainly nice to see and enjoy. It was a sparse crowd. I think the weather, the cold, the rain, I think there were the opponent. I think there were a number of factors that went into that, but it was a good hearty crowd. I think it was a little. I was on Facebook making comments about the Mountain West, watching a game over some drinks late Friday night, and I think some of that came back to haunt me because we got a cold, sparse game in Tuscaloosa. So I had some Facebook jokes on that. If you want to participate on a go forward, like us on Facebook and you get all that sort of fun stuff as well. But Mac Jones, 10 of 12, 275, and he finished the game with seven straight completions. That's really nice. I don't know that in his limited window, and that's all that he was going to get is a limited window against this opponent. He executed very well. He was mostly on script, and I don't think you could ask for anything more coming out of Mac Jones. Talking about some of the offensive weapons, Devonta Smith, if he's not the best underrated player that we've ever had, then I don't know who is. If he were the receiver without the Ruggs and the Waddle and the Jerry Jeudy, then, you know, people would consider him an all-time great. And I'm starting to lean that way. He has had game winners. I think of the national championship game, but also earlier that season against Mississippi State. And this season he has had two 200 yard games, which is just amazing. And so he did not disappoint against Western Carolina on his first touchdown. The sort of the crossover move, I'll use a basketball analogy again, the crossover move, the ankles that he broke on those two defenders, and then from essentially a stop to redirect, restart, and then outrun secondary players for a long touchdown was just phenomenal. Jerry Jeudy had an incredible block on that play, but it was we kind of kidded in the stands that Jeudy said, "I'll get this one, and you get the other guys." And Devonta sort of Batmaned his way to a touchdown there. It was just an incredible play. On his second touchdown, and I almost want to go back and see if it was the same defender. In his second touchdown, which was thrown by Talia, it looked like the defender did not close out to the sideline. It looked like it looked like Devonta was going to make the move back inside like he did for the first touchdown. But the defender didn't close out to the sideline, force him back inside where there might be help. And so Devonta just lowered his head and accelerated down the sideline. And so I thought that was interesting to see the juxtaposition there. Makes me wonder if that defender on the second wasn't one of the ones that got abused on the first touchdown. Waddle just looked athletically superior to everyone. His three catches for 101 yards, and we'll talk about his special team returns, but, you know, he had almost another 100 yards and almost another touchdown over there. He had a play where just down the sideline, he just looked like he just willed himself to run fast enough to score a touchdown just as the defenders were coming to close out. So that was a phenomenal play. Najee Harris didn't have big yardage totals, but 14 carries for 66 yards and one reception for a touchdown. So two touchdowns, was just physical. He looked like he had made up his mind that I'm going to go out and just beat these guys up because I know that I can. And he ran really physical at the point of attack. And so it's good to see him continue to progress. I think I saw a stat where Najee Harris is the first player in the SEC in the last 20 years to have a touchdown reception and a touchdown carry in three consecutive games. And so that's 20 years in the SEC. That's pretty darn impressive. And it seems like every week he has another sort of that type of stat as he continues to evolve and progress and just elevate his game. And certainly it's something we'll need to lean on as we get, sort of the rest of the games that we have on the schedule. I was a little bit surprised to see B-Rob only have four carries. I know that he had a fumble near the goal line. He also had a touchdown on another run near the goal line. Four carries compared to Najee's 14. I had kind of predicted that that Brian Robinson might get more carries than Najee as we sort of tried to shift the load. I don't know if there was an injury situation that wasn't disclosed. I don't know if it was just the fumble and we put him on the bench. I don't know if he was, working union, and so I scored my touchdown, I'm done. I don't know what it was, but that'll be an interesting thing to see how he comes out against Auburn and what sort of ratio of reps and participation that he gets, because I think we will need the two-headed monster at the running back position. Keelan Robinson, when he came in, I knew early on that his speed wouldn't be contained, that he was that if he could catch a corner or if he could catch a move, that he was going to score a touchdown. It's just his speed, and hindsight 2020, I know it's easy to sort of accuse me of that, but if you watched him play, and especially live, watched his move, watched his acceleration relative to the opponent, you could just flat tell that he was athletically superior. Especially, he's our third running back in there. There's a lot of rotations later in the game. They're making rotations to the gap between his athleticism and the opponent's athleticism. You could just tell that he was going to break a run. And so he had eight carries for 92 yards one long 46-yard touchdown. Zero passes to the tight end. I was a little surprised about that. I was hoping Jaleel Billingsley would get more active in the game. And then no Henry Ruggs, So we put up an offensive explosion without Ruggs. And so find another. When everyone talks about, you know, receiving core, who's the best receiving core? Henry Ruggs is going to be one of the top receivers chosen in an NFL draft. I think this is a deep draft for NFL for receivers. And so our guys may not go, you know, top 10, because why do you spend a top 10 pick on a receiver when you can get, you know, a quality receiver later? And so I think that's going to push down some of the top guys. But one of the top guys chosen will be Henry Ruggs. And to think that Alabama could have this offensive explosion with Henry Ruggs not participating, not in uniform, teams can't do that. And Alabama does. The offensive line, I thought, performed well. Could have played better. I think there were a lot of stunts and a lot of inside movement from the Catamounts that impacted the offensive line as a whole. I thought the line played well. But if there's anything that's going to give me a little pause, is they were effective, the Catamounts, effective in stopping the run inside on Alabama. And Auburn has a much stronger defensive front. And so that's certainly something to think about. I think the intensity and the level of preparation, our offense, offensive line will rise to the occasion there. Late in the game, Alabama had 66 points. There are 4, 5, 6 minutes left on the clock. And I jokingly, you know, mentioned to the folks sitting around that Coach Saban's biggest challenge yet this season might be keeping the Tide from scoring in those last couple of minutes, just the athletic superiority, you know, with even with our backups against Western Carolina, their backups, just the gap just got bigger. And nothing more evident than across the offensive line. We mentioned Keelan, but across the offensive line, Alabama has the backup offensive line. And on that line, it consists of Ikior, who started at guard earlier this season, and Matt Womack, who started earlier this season and has been a starter across the offensive front. He's won a national title as a starter at Alabama, and he goes a good 6'7", 6'8", 350 pounds. And so you have to think, if you are a backup reserve defensive lineman for Western Carolina and you're going in to play the backup at Alabama and it's Matt Womack, you just have to throw your hands up in the air and say, you know, what can I do? And so with that type of front lined up, it truly was just run up the middle, run up the middle, run up the middle. We ran a lot of different running backs. Again, just run up the middle. Don't make a move. Don't juke. Don't do anything, but just run up the middle. And I won't say let them tackle you, but let them tackle you. That is the only reason Alabama did not score. If they had lined up and sort of ran, hey, we're going to bounce it outside, and ran anything that wasn't the equivalent of a fullback dive, the running backs would have scored, no doubt, no doubt about it. Again, the disparity across the fronts and in the talent at the running back position. Chidarius Townsend got some run at running back, and he is a, you know, point him in a motion, and he's going to run full speed. He reminds me a little bit of a poor man's Kenyon Drake in that regard. Offensive mini game balls, I'm going Judy for his block on Devonta's first touchdown. That was just textbook, the way that he laid out his man and allowed Devonta to make his moves. And then I go sentimental sometimes on mini game balls. I'm going Terrell Shavers for his first catch. He has played very well in special teams. We'll talk about special teams almost blocking multiple punts, but the fact that he recorded his first catch was certainly impressive, and glad to see that. Flipping the field to defense, you know, I think the headline and really all you need to know about the defensive performance is that Alabama had 5 turnovers, collected 5 turnovers, 4 of which were interceptions, and they allowed a net of 179 yards. If you want to boil down the Catamounts' offensive play to a single play, you got to take sort of the stat pack play where the quarterback completed a pass to himself due to a defensive lineman blocking the pass. And then as he runs out, and so he's got a pass, he's got a completion, he's gaining yards, he's tackled, he fumbles, and commits a turnover. And so I think that in terms of futility across the Catamount offense, that is a pretty representative play there. There were others that were not dissimilar. There was an interception where Barmore just absolutely mauled the running back. It was a fake handoff, and so just right there, just collapsed him, just quite aggressively. The quarterback was hit, threw off his back foot, and threw an interception. And so that's another sort of textbook sort of play that multiple defenders performing to spec, and it having a significant negative impact on Western Carolina offense. I'll call out a couple of folks. We'll hit some highlights on defense. There were some things we didn't like on defense as well. But Barmore, Byron Young, and Justin Eboibi, four youngsters across the defensive line, each recording a sack. So that was nice to see. We played multiple other youngsters on the defensive front, and so it was good to see them get some reps. We are especially pleased that this is an era where the rule is you can play in any four games during the season, not just limited participation in initial games of the season, but any four across the season. So you take Brandon Ingram and I think it's Isaiah Shopshire. This is some of their first play. I think Ingram has been in two games, Shopshire in one. And so the fact that even though it's late in the season, they're still able to redshirt, I think that's certainly good. That bodes well for the defensive front moving forward. They could also get reps in upcoming games, which will be good in depth and an opportunity to participate, but then still retain a year of eligibility. So that's it counts as a redshirt, so that's certainly good. Interceptions and pairs. McKinney had a couple of really nice touchdowns, interceptions, one of which he did return for a touchdown. It was a long return, and the way that he caught it and then ran to the sideline in just a quick scan of the sideline, you could tell that the blocking was lining up, that the defenders coming across didn't have an angle. You know that there was an athletic disparity. But I think about the 50, maybe the other 40-yard line, I was calling house. He's taking it to the house. It was that obvious that he was gonna return that. And again, the benefit, you can't see that on TV, but in the stands and in the stadium, and he was coming down the sideline closest to where to where we were sitting. And so it was easy to see, oh, this is going to line up. He's going to score a touchdown here. And so, and in Maiden as well, had two interceptions, one off a Shaq Carter deflection. So it's good to see those guys combining for a big play there. Linebackers and coverage. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we give a little bit of a preview for the Auburn game. I thought both linebackers played well. Both linebackers made plays. But we talk about getting them in coverage a little bit. Of note, Trayvon came out of the game earlier than the rest of the starters on defense, and Josh Job participated, which he's a virtual starter. And so on one hand, I'm okay with that. On the other hand, I was watching Trayvon on the sideline. Why did he rotate out when the rest of the secondary did not? And I saw him on the sideline with the defenders. He looked okay walking around, but he didn't have his helmet with him. And so we knew that his day was over, but we didn't know why. And, even it's Tuesday morning, even to this point, I don't know why. And so I'm going to presume it's not an injury. I'm going to presume it's just getting depth and rotation in, which is certainly fine. But that's something to take a look at against Auburn. Daniel Wright got a little more run in the secondary, which that's certainly good to see. He had four tackles on the day. And put him sort of in the upper half of the tackle count across the team. You can no longer call him a youngster. He's an upperclassman. But he's a guy that I think will really show out for Alabama next year. He's going to be a guy, if you could buy stocks and players, he's a guy that I would put something down on, because he's going to come from relative obscurity next year. Now, if you listen to this podcast, then you've heard us talk about him. But think about just, your casual fan, that they know McKinney and they maybe know Trayvon and they maybe know some of the players. They don't know Daniel Wright. And Daniel Wright's a guy that's going to just sort of burst on the scene next year, probably have four or five interceptions, probably return one of them for an interception and, or for a touchdown. And just he's going to make explosive plays like that next year. And again, if he were a stock, I would buy in because I think that he's going to, you know, sort of come from nowhere next season. You know, I think, you know, we'll talk about, you know, we gave up yardage. We gave up plays. Some of it was linebackers and coverage. Some of it was short passing. I'll really sort of spend another minute on that talking about Auburn. But, you know, we saw more of that against Western Carolina than we would have liked. But the net is that they were never really a threat, you know, never really a threat to score. And certainly never really a threat to, you know, to win the game. And so if they're always going to be a soft spot in the zone, there's always going to be a little bit of a crease. And the opposing coach and the opposing players, you know, I guess coaches getting paid. I need to separate that out. The opposing coaches are getting paid and the opposing, you know, players are on scholarship. They have some level of capability. And the fact that they were able to find some soft spots is not altogether a surprise. But probably definitely some things that the defense needs to work on there. For mini game ball, I'm gonna call out two guys again. I'm gonna go again. More of a sentimental pick, but I'm gonna go Jared Maiden. You know, four tackles, two interceptions. He has been an underrated guy in terms of, you know, he was a bench guy for a while. Special teams, he was depth. For a while, and last year he sort of broke on the scene as the dime back, and then this year more as a full time participant, a full time starter, and so reminds me almost of a Robert Lester, a guy that's kind of hung around, and then later in his career really evolved into a starting role, and I think Maiden even progressed further than Lester did, although Lester did have that one season with he just seemed like he was intercepting everything. But nonetheless, Jared Maiden, a guy that has stuck around, participated as a senior, and then has an opportunity to really sort of burst on the scene. And so he has done that this season, and certainly on senior day, he did not disappoint with a pair of interceptions. So cap nod to Maiden. And then similar, but maybe at a lower sort of level, watermark, if you will, I'd go to Vita Masika. He had three tackles, one for a loss on the day, and he participated. I think he was a starter against Western Carolina. I think that's going to be his first start. As this season has gone on, he has found himself playing more and more earlier and earlier in games. We mentioned against LSU, obviously a critical game. He participated in the first quarter, and so he was a material part of the rotation. And here's a guy that last year did not play a whole lot, was certainly depth last year, and he has sort of kicked it up a notch and is a material part of the rotation. So hats off to Tavita and his day. And again, another stout performance from a senior on senior day. So that's certainly good. Special teams. You know, I thought Joseph Bolivis was going to get a usage injury at some point. He was 9 for 9 on PATs. He had one field goal for 29 yards. And then with all of the kickoff duties, he definitely put his time in on Saturday. 9 for 9 on PATs. That's probably his longest stretch of hitting PATs. I don't think he missed any last week as well. And so he's setting some new records there. I'll give another cap tip to Eric. He made the comment that, you know, he's made 9 for 9, but some of them look like kick for tuition kicks because they were line drives, but they were going through. And so that's, you know, we'll absolutely take that. Ty Pirine, man, I want to get on him for his shank, but then, and certainly, all right, that's legit, right? He had a 33-yard shank, but then I almost want to pause and say, wait a second, his shank is a representation of how good he is. And so he clearly had a poor kick, and it went 33 yards. We've had games this season with other punters who have averaged below 40. I think we had a game where the punter had two or three or four punts, and averaged 36. And then we had another game where same said punter was south of 20 or was south of 30. averaging multiple kicks. And then just be realistic, we had, was it Lane Bearden? Am I remembering the right guy? I don't think it is. Cade Foster is who I'm thinking about. He averaged 39 for the season. And so 33 is certainly less than 39, but you start thinking about neighborhoods of performance. And that was his shank. There's some interesting sort of thought exercise. Clearly we want him to get out there and hit north of 45, and that's what we've been seeing from him, and we want more of that. But I start to think about that shank in a larger context, and you know, it's not as bad as what we've seen. Ali Cajo and Terrell Shavers, man, I thought they were going to block some punts. They were just so close so many times. You could almost just, your ear got expectant to hear the thud of a blocked kick. They were just so darn close. I'd like to see a camera angle just to see exactly how close. Maybe I need to go back and look at the DVR version of the game and just see how close they were, because there were three or four times where it to the naked eye in the stands, 49 rows up, boy, it looked like they were going to get it. And they didn't. But I like the fact that they were that close. And then that's something else that the future teams have to think about, that just so consistently they can get that close. And so that was something to see. Jaylen Waddle, just another big day. My memory recalled him returning a punt for a touchdown. And I just think that's because the victory was so dominating in every facet that I just assumed we had a punt return for a touchdown. ESPN wouldn't show it to me. Thought I read an article, though, that did mention he had one. So I find myself a little confused on that. But nonetheless, he had three or four returns, 87 total yards in return. And so you add that to his 101 in offense receiving. And so, you know, he was up near two for the day. Just a phenomenally productive day by Jaylen Waddle. So dominating performance by Alabama, every phase of the game, exactly what we needed to see. Yes, it was Western Carolina. Of course, I don't take anything away from that truth, but you got to go do it. You have to do it against the team that you're playing. And to put up 66 points easily could have been over 70, easily. And to hold them to three, I don't begrudge them kicking a field goal. Zero looks better, but I don't begrudge, you know, their coach kicking that field goal. They're bringing their team in. They're getting their asses handed to them all day long. They have a losing record on the season. And if they can kick a field goal and score 3 points against Alabama, then that is something that they can take with them. And maybe I'm just getting soft in my as I get older, but I don't begrudge them that sort of cheap 3 points. Nonetheless, but again, a dominating performance. I think it'll be something. I'm recording earlier on Tuesday, so it'll be interesting to see what the committee does tonight with Georgia's showing against A&M. They did not look good against A&M. They easily could have lost that game against A&M. There are a couple penalties that were not called. And it just A&M just looked atrocious. Georgia should have just whipped the tar out of them because A&M just looked crappy. And so you look at common opponent, us and A&M, A&M and South Carolina. I think there's potentially an opportunity that we leap Georgia. I don't think it happens, but I think there's an opportunity. And certainly seeing Oregon lose was a nice to see. And so that creates a little sort of separation on the back end. What we need to do is now become Oregon fans and root for them to knock off Utah to create some more separation on the back end. You know, Georgia and LSU are going to, you know, we need LSU to win that game, not Georgia, because I don't think Georgia could knock LSU out, but LSU can knock Georgia out. And so we could hurdle Georgia in that regard. And then you start to look at, well, the comparison of Oklahoma and Alabama. What does that look like? Oklahoma's loss, and Tom and I talked about this, the other night, just when we were talking about, we were meeting up on when we could record, and we just didn't line up, but we had, you know, some conversation around Oklahoma, and I think we both sort of landed on, even as a conference champ with a loss, they were getting just smacked around by Baylor, and they lost to Kent State, and that's one of those ugly losses that it's hard to sort of wash that out of your mouth. Ohio State has had a couple of those that have kept them out of the playoffs. I think last year to Purdue, And there was another one a year or so ago. I can't remember who it was. It was that level of nondescript team. And so did Oklahoma get that type of treatment with the loss to Kansas State and the struggle they had against Baylor? And I think they've struggled with another team. Obviously, we can root for Okie State to knock them off, and then we can root for Baylor to make them look bad in the Big 12 championship. All of those things we could root for. But I think it comes down to, and so this is my setup and segue, it comes down to the Auburn game. And how telling is it that so many times it comes down to the Auburn game with, you know, obviously these two teams and these two rivals. I think if Alabama puts a number up, look, I'm not going to say it's going to be easy. I'm not even sure that I'm predicting it. But if Alabama puts a number up against Auburn, then Alabama's in. I don't know if, and a number, you know, 40 to 14 kind of game. Now, I don't know if that happens. And I'm not even predicting that game. I'm predicting, you know, a closer game, 24 to 13 or something like that. And is that enough of a separation to automatically get Alabama in? I don't know. But if Alabama puts up a number, then I think Alabama's in. And so that's the incentive, that's the motivation across the team, across the coaching staff. So that'll be the big thing to sort of watch is how aggressively do we go for that type of showing? And I think we'll, you know, that'll be something to sort of pulse check throughout the game. But I do think Auburn presents challenges for Alabama. And so I'm not discounting them in any regard. They are, as Coach says, one of the best teams that we've played this season, which is part of our conundrum from a scheduling standpoint. They do have sort of the cheesy attack that they run and the little sugar huddle thing. I'll say two things, right? Don't sit down to watch this game like with a plate of food and expect that, you know, you're not going to get an upset stomach. This is sit down and watch the game. Don't focus on anything else, because they're going to do some things, especially things early. And just the thought of having a plate of food, you know, digesting as that happens, I want no part of that. And then if you were to play a drinking game with CBS saying sugar huddle, then, you know, prepare to just get, you know, trashed, because they're going to do that. They're going to come out with that. And we have to understand why, right? We are vulnerable in the middle. We're vulnerable with our linebackers. We are vulnerable with them in coverage. And we're vulnerable with their youth and their assignment. And so think about what the quick huddle does. I'm not even going to call it the sugar huddle. Think about what the quick huddle does. It allows you to run up to the line of scrimmage and run a play, and you can do sort of odd formations or unusual formations and not give the defense time to react. And so you can stack a formation one way and then just run a play before the defense has a chance to sort of survey and line up. And so this is the offense, not where's the Mike linebacker, now let's adjust. It is the offense dictating the terms. We don't care about where your mic is, because we're going to line up in a way that if he lines up where he's supposed to be, he's going to be out of position because of the way we've lined up. So it's the offense sort of dictating the terms, not just the pace, but the formation as well, and creating those sorts of mismatches. And so look for Auburn to do a lot of that. If I were Auburn, that's what I would do. I would want to take advantage of the youth, and especially at the middle linebacker position, not to pick on those guys, but it is what it is. And so look for Alabama to run schemes and formations in the defense that account for that, that account for those gaps, however people, line up. The Tide will have some success with that and will struggle with that at times. But watch for, you know, the Auburn H-backs, tight ends, running backs to pick on the linebackers, get them in coverage. We've also seen against LSU where Auburn ran 7 defensive backs. And so look for that type of formation where there's an extra secondary guy. See if they can't mess with Mac Jones's eyes a little bit. And so we'll see how that is practiced, how that's simulated and this week, and how Mac is able to respond to that. what Alabama needs to do is focus, especially early on, in getting reps on Auburn's defense. We need to, if we go 5 and out, that's going to be better than a 3 and out. If we get 6 and a miss, you know, 6 possessions, 6 plays and a missed field goal, that's better than a 3 and out. And we need to track this game at that more of that micro level. What's the time of possession, you know, across the first quarter? How many plays is the Alabama offense putting on Auburn's defensive front? Auburn does not have the depth, but their top tier is really, really good. They have NFL talent across their front. And so how can we impact the Auburn defensive front? That's where we need to watch the game early. Take shots. Let's try to score points. I agree with all of that. But watch for the game within the game, because I think not win or lose, you know, obviously losing, Alabama's out of the playoffs. That's pretty straightforward. But the nature, so we're picking an Alabama win. The nature of the win will determine whether or not Alabama gets into the playoffs, unless just anarchy breaks out and a whole bunch of teams lose and Alabama's sitting there at 11-1. If we're at 11-1 and we win this game by 3 points, that's going to look very different than 11-1 and we win this team by 17 points. And that's obviously, it's what we want, but that's what we need to sort of track towards and watch and see how we're doing it. And I think it's going to be putting reps across the front. It's going to be attacking outside, and it's going to be managing Auburn's quick huddle with you know, an array of formations across the secondary. So that's some prediction there. I'm going to go out and I think I said it's a 24-13 type game. So that's an 11 point margin. And so I am planting myself sort of firmly in that gray area. That's probably not enough to definitively put Alabama in, but it's enough with, you know, Mac as a quarterback. And especially if we do that and he plays well, it's enough to put enough question or doubt in the committee's mind to say, this Alabama team still has it. They're not just one guy with Tua. This is a team with a quarterback that can drive the offense. And so this is a team worthy of making the playoffs. That's the showing that we need to have. And hopefully we see that from Alabama. All right, I am officially late for a work meeting, so I need to drop here. But I do want to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully, you're spending time traveling safely and with family and friends, and hopefully doing the same on Saturday as we watch Alabama hopefully thump the Auburn Tigers. And with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide!
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.